It's 9:06. Do you know what your smartphone's apps are doing? Good morning. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this week on the Ideas Network. A recent article in the Wall Street Journal revealed that a number of smartphone applications transmit your private data to third parties, often more than one, and including things like your location, age, gender, and other information. Smartphones aren't like computers. You can't really block what an application sees or reveals to others. So what happens to privacy? Well, that's what we're going to talk about this morning with a pair of guests. My first guest is Scott Thurm, Deputy Chief of the San Francisco Bureau of the Wall Street Journal, and he wrote the article that we're using as our reference point today. Good morning, Scott, and welcome to the program.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, what put you onto the issue of smartphone applications revealing personal data to others?
Well, one of several people here at the Journal have been involved in a series of stories we've been doing for much of the year about Internet privacy. And so we started by testing the 50 most popular websites in the U.S., looking to see what cookies and other types of tracking technology they were placing on users' computers. So when you go to websites, cookies can be useful things. They remember things like passwords and stuff, but they're also used by marketers to keep track of what websites you visit, and then they use those to build profiles about you. So we tested the 50 most popular websites, and then we tested 50 of the most popular websites for kids, and surprised ourselves, or surprisingly even to us, that there was even more tracking technology on those sites than there was on the more popular sites for the general population. And then we just started thinking that computing seems to be going mobile. I mean, we call them phones still, but these things we strap to our hips are really little computers. And particularly with the rise of these applications, or so-called apps, in the last couple of years since Apple introduced the new iPhone and then opened its App Store in 2008, an increasing share of computing is being done on these phones. And, a few academics had looked at the possibility for what they call data leakage from apps, and so we just decided we would try to mimic as closely as we could the kinds of study that we did for cookies on the web by looking for what data about people were being transmitted by these applications on mobile phones.
And so once you started digging, what did you find?
Well, what we found was, what you summarized it pretty well. I mean, dozens of the apps. We tested 101 apps, 50 on the iPhone, 50 on phones that use Google's Android platform. Plus, we tested our own app, which at the time was only available on the iPhone. And about three-quarters of the 101, or 74 of the 101, sent some information to an outside company. And the most common types of information that were being sent were either serial number type identifiers for the phone. These unique identifiers that can have 30 or 40 letters and numbers strung together, but they apply only to your phone. So that was one type of information. A second was location. Phones have the ability to access GPS information from the global positioning system satellites. They also tap into these networks of Wi-Fi hotspots. I mean, you may have heard about or read about these stories. Some people are upset about these Google cars that drive around and with this sensing equipment on the roof. It's become a little bit of an issue in some of the European countries. Well, what those things are doing is they're making logs of all the little Wi-Fi hotspots that people use, and they use those to create the maps. And then the third thing that we saw transmitted a fair amount were demographic information, where users would fill out profiles to use a site. MySpace, Pandora were two of the ones that did this. Pandora is a music site. And you'd go in, you'd fill out a profile, you'd say you're a 37-year-old male, and then we found both Pandora and MySpace passing that demographic information to advertising networks. So they would say, okay, this phone user 123456, not the name, but the device identifier 123456 is a 37-year-old male. So those were the three biggest sort of clumps of information that we saw being transmitted.
And then this data is collected and used for what? Presumably targeted advertising, just like cookies?
Yeah, at the moment, it seems to be limited primarily to target advertising, and to some degree, not even much of that. I mean, the mobile phone ad network is pretty small relative to the overall internet advertising market, and even smaller than things like the television advertising market. So it's to try to get some degree of targeting involved. But one of the overriding lessons of our series this year is that once these data are captured and collected and get in the hands of these companies that handle them, they can sometimes have secondary and tertiary uses. We've done stories that, and this is all in the world of cookies now, but we've done stories about credit card companies that the first time you go to their site, before you've even told them who you are, they know a lot about you from your cookies, and so you and I may get different credit card offers the very first time we visit a site. We've done stories about companies that make take these cookies on the web and make them very sophisticated profiles to the point where they include your political affiliations and whether or not you go to church and whether or not you read the Bible. And we've done stories about how life insurers are at least considering the idea of using the information they can glean from cookies in lieu of things like blood tests to determine who's a good risk for life insurance. So,
yeah, the term in some of these stories that really disturbed me and what kind of got me onto pushing for this as a topic for the show is the term dossier. I guess I'm not real comfortable with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's just, for us, it became a convenient way to describe what some of these businesses are doing when you are using the information for things like assessing risk for life insurance or identifying potential credit card customers before they've told you anything about them. It seems to be a pretty good description of what some of these companies are doing. And another thing we learned and have written about this year is that there's a growing number of ways in which the data that's being gathered from people via cookies and things like that on the web is being combined with the huge amounts of data about you in your offline life. You know, the kind of the things that go into credit reports, you know, your shopping patterns, your, you know, what kind of home you own, what kind of car you drive, and whether or not you have kids, what kind of neighborhood you live in. And so there are growing places where those things are going together to make these profiles or dossiers of people even more more detailed, not always accurate, I might say, but at least more detailed. And so the mobile world is nowhere near that now. I mean, it's the advertising market for mobile phones is about 3% of the internet advertising market, and it really is just, at the moment, we think it's primarily limited to targeted advertising. But these are the kinds of things that have happened with the data that's been accumulated on the web, and it doesn't seem to be a far stretch to think that the same trajectory could happen with the data on mobile phones.
We only have Scott here until 9:30, and then we'll have another guest, but I want to allow people to get in on the discussion as quickly as we can here. So I'll start by giving the phone number, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email address is talk@wpr.org, or you can go to the Kathleen Dunn Facebook fan page, leave a comment there, and we'll pass it along to the listening audience. Okay, so I got an iPhone in September. I really like it. I don't know what I did before I had it, which is kind of frightening to me. But I've downloaded some apps, some things that I wanted that were informational and so forth. I deal in information, and it's nice to be able to have it available to me when I want it rather than having to go to my computer for it. But did you notice a difference between and when you looked at various apps and how they behaved, did you notice a difference between applications that you had to pay for and applications that were free?
I'd say on average, the answer to that is yes, but there were exceptions. I mean, we only had the resources to test. First of all, you know, it's important to note we tested, you know, 50 apps, 50 iPhone apps, 50 Android apps. There are hundreds of thousands of these things. So we really, you know, our sample here is really, really, really small. And in the among the 50, I mean, we sort of guessed, and you know, it was an educated guess based on the reporting we had done ahead of time, that there would be more of this kind of data leakage on the free apps because, quite frankly, that's the business model, is to place advertising on the free apps, and that's how they make money, whereas the apps you have to pay for, you know, that they can raise money that way. And in fact, on average, well, we didn't have a huge number of paid apps. We broke it down on each side. We had 40 free and 10 paid. So now we're talking down to really, really small sample, and it's really hard to draw much of a conclusion from it. But on average, on both sides, the iPhone side and the Android side, the free apps leaked more data than did the paid apps. Now, there were some exceptions to that, which I unfortunately can't recall off the top of my head, but where we matched pairs. We had the free and the paid of the same app, and the paid one actually sent more. But on average, the paid one sent less.
Now, in your article, you talked to Google and Apple about this issue. What do they have to say?
Well, they take very different approaches to this. So Apple says that you know, that it's sort of watching out for you, that they manage the App Store. The only place you can get apps for iPhone is through Apple's App Store. They review all the apps before they allow them to be posted there and then available for download to users. And that they you know, have a bunch of rules about what developers can do, what the apps can do. Before, what we found though is that it was hard. It was hard to get them to answer our questions about how they interpret some of the rules. So the rules say things like, well, let me just scroll down here and get this one quote about, you know, you can't basically say you can't transmit user data to other people without giving them cannot transmit data about a user without obtaining the user's prior permission and providing the user with access to information about how and where the data will be used. So that sounds like a pretty good rule. The problem is we couldn't get Apple to tell us what it meant, how they apply it, what it means, how they interpret it. And depending on how you define data about a user, we found a lot of apps that seemed to be violating it. But again, Apple wouldn't answer our question. So Apple says, we'll protect you, but it's not clear exactly how they're doing it. Google takes almost the opposite approach. Google doesn't review the apps ahead of time. It doesn't require you to buy them from what it calls the Android market. There are dozens of websites where you can buy or download free Android apps. And Google's attitude is they give you a long list of disclosures at the beginning. They require the app to give you a long list of disclosures. When you download the app, we're going to access your contacts. We're going to access your location. We're going to access your phone memory. We're going to access this or that. And then you decide, based on the list and based on how much you trust the application, whether or not you're going to say yes to that. And if you say yes, then the app has access to that. And your choice is to say no, and then you don't get the app. And Google says it's up to developers and users, essentially, to police themselves.
Talking with Scott Thurm of the Wall Street Journal, he wrote the article, "Your Apps Are Watching You." We're talking about how your cell phone applications may be sharing your data with others. Wondering if you have a concern about that. Maybe you don't think it's a big deal. I know we've already had one caller who couldn't hang on, who said, "Hey, what's the problem?" I think we're maybe in this age of the Internet, it might be a generational thing. Some of our younger listeners might not think it's as big a deal because they're maybe used to this. Perhaps people of my generation who are used to maybe a higher level of privacy may find it more significant. We'll continue to talk about this with Scott until about 9:30, and then we have an Internet security expert on after 9:30 to talk about some of the more technical aspects of how all of this works, and maybe we'll get into some policy questions as well. If you'd like to join the discussion, here's how you do it. 800-642-1234 is a toll-free number, 800-642-1234. The email address, talk@WPR.org, and we've got some email we'll share after the break. You can also go to Facebook, look for the Kathleen Dunn Facebook fan page, and leave a message there. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Coming up a little bit later on today, you know, I can't think of a better way to spend my lunch hour than to listen to Carl Schmidt read. This week he's reading from Christmas at Thompson Hall by Anthony Trollope, a holiday classic from another time. That comes up at 12:30 this afternoon on Chapter a Day. This hour we're talking about privacy and your smartphone. A recent study by the Wall Street Journal revealed that quite a few of the applications that they tested transmit your personal data to other companies, other entities for their uses. And we're wondering if you think this is a concern. Is this something that bothers you now that you know about it? Maybe you did know about it. Maybe you don't care. Either way, why don't you let us know? 800-642-1234. Here's an email from Mark in Elkhorn. I read in the newspapers the other day that e-readers are watching our reading habits now, too. The companies can see what we read, when we read, and how long we read, likely to report this information to companies so they can better market books to us. Well, that makes a certain amount of sense, Scott, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, we didn't test any of the e-readers, but, you know, one thing that's interesting that we learned in doing this is, you know, Apple and Google, in addition to, you know, they make the software that makes the phones run. So, you know, the iPhone runs on Apple software and the Android phones run on Google software. Apple and Google both also now own advertising networks. So they're sort of on all sides of this. Apple in particular says, you know, we don't develop these profiles, these dossiers we were talking about of users, the way some of the other advertising companies do. But what Apple does do, which is kind of interesting, because remember that the applications in the App Store are sort of a subset of the iTunes service. And what Apple does is it looks at least at broad categories of the kinds of things, not just the apps you download, but also the media you're downloading on your iTunes. So music, but increasingly videos and things like that. And so you can see sort of in where these companies are headed now, where they are now, where this all of this may be headed down the road, and how it could include things like ebooks.
Now, I noticed with a certain amount of irony that about 2 days after your article hit the newsstands, another article popped up that says, cell phone marketers plan rules on privacy. How surprising was that story to come up for you?
It was a little surprising. The group that issued that yesterday is called the Mobile Marketing Association. It's a trade group of advertisers and advertising networks and phone companies that run the phone networks and the application makers and so forth. And, you know, they said they were going to look at potentially creating some rules around privacy and disclosure on cell phones. Now I don't think they read our story on Saturday and you know put it together on Sunday and released it on Monday. And in fact, when I talked to the association's CEO yesterday, he said you know that they had been working on it for a while. But and this did surprise me. He said quite frankly they viewed our story as a service that I was sort of bracing for him to tell me all the problems that they had with our story. And he said you know he thought it was well done and that basically. He thought it would help them, you know, sort of rally all the different interests within the industry to maybe get some rules around this. Because, you know, one of the things we pointed out, again, if you go back to the cookie comparison from before, is that there are no real industry standards yet for these smartphone apps. And the other thing is there's much less users have much less control over them. On on websites, there are technology has evolved to where you can block cookies. You can choose, I'll accept this cookie but not that cookie. I can turn off this and turn on that. And really, you know, by and large, with very few exceptions, none of that technology exists for phones. These identifiers, these serial numbers that I mentioned before, those are hardwired into the phone, and you can't block them, you can't delete them, you can't tell them which times you'll accept it and which times you won't. You have a little bit of choice usually around when you will or won't broadcast your location, but it's not very transparent to users, and most users don't know when they're transmitting location and when they're not. And so I think the industry itself was recognizing that it may be time that there are some rules put in place here for what you can do and can't do with phones and the information you gather from people via phones.
I know you have to leave us very shortly. I wanted to ask is the Federal Trade Commission is considering some rules on Internet privacy. Do you think that any of this policymaking will spill over into the smartphone market as well?
I think, based on where we've seen the federal policymakers go in the last couple of months, I think it's highly likely that sooner or later they'll start looking at this. I mean, we reported no specific indication. The FTC or the Department of Commerce, which is the other group that's been involved, is looking at this. But, you know, there's every reason to believe that as they develop these new policies for around privacy in the digital era, that they'll also begin to look at what happens on the phone as well as what happens on the web.
How concerned do you think smartphone users need to be? And is this, you know, caveat emptor? We should expect this kind of behavior from marketers who are always looking for more information to fine-tune their marketing efforts. But, I mean, how concerned should I be that I have a smartphone and I have some applications on it, that my information is being passed around?
Well, right now I think you should be concerned primarily because you don't know when it's being passed around. You know, as you said before, and you know, when you paraphrased one of the comments you got from a listener, there are people who are okay with this, and that's fine. If you make an informed choice that you're willing to, some people talk about it as a trade, that you're giving up this information, and that's how you're able to get the content for free. But one of the issues here is disclosure. And again, you know, Apple has this policy that none of this data about users is supposed to be transmitted without the user being told. But, you know, we never saw any disclosures about the fact that some of this information would be handed off to third parties. There's no disclosure that the location would be handed to third parties. There's no disclosure that the phone serial numbers will be handed to third parties. There's no little and spotty disclosure that the profile information will be handed to third parties. And so if people want to make an informed choice that it's okay with them, that's okay. I mean, that's, you know, it's a free society. But I think at this point, the first issue is really about disclosure and whether or not people even know when this data is being gathered and what's being done with it. And that's sort of the predicate to them being able to make informed choices.
Scott, I know you have to leave, and I just wanted to say thanks for joining us and thanks for writing the article and bringing this to our attention. This is important stuff for us to talk about.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'll put in a little plug in case you weren't going to do it. I mean, people want to see all the results. One of the things we've done with all three of these data projects, as we call them, the two web where we looked at the cookies and then also with the phones, is all of the results are available on our website. They're displayed there. You know, every single cookie we found, every single phone serial number or location that was transmitted, you can see what app sent it and where it went, and they're all on wsj.com/WTK.
WSJ.com/WTK. I'm assuming that link will appear on the Kathleen Dunn Facebook fan page shortly, if not immediately. Thank you. Thanks, Scott, for being with us this morning. I really appreciate it. Scott Thurm, Deputy Chief of the San Francisco Bureau of the Wall Street Journal, who wrote the article that formed the basis for this discussion. Going to shift gears just a little bit here and maybe get into some of the more technical aspects of this type of privacy concern. And I would like it if you would join our discussion. Maybe this isn't a concern for you, and tell us why. And maybe it is, and tell us maybe you've had an experience with this. Here's the phone number, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can send us an email, talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org, or find us on Facebook. The Kathleen Dunn Facebook page is there for you to use. You can leave your comment there, and then we'll share it. So, I see we're having trouble getting our next guest on the air. Well, I'll just tell you a little bit about her as we move ahead on this. My next guest will be, at some point, when we can make the technology do what it is we want it to do, is Hang Xu, Assistant Professor of Information Sciences and Technology at Penn State University. She's also the leader of the Privacy Assurance Lab and Associate Director of Cybersecurity, Information Privacy and Trust, the Lyons Center, also at Penn State. She has authored over 50 research papers on information privacy, security management, human-computer interaction, and technology innovation and adoption. And we're trying to get her online right now, having a little bit of trouble with the phone system. Maybe it's all the snow. That could be it. We're talking this hour. This came up because I happened to see an article online in the Wall Street Journal about what happens with the iPhone and Android applications. And the reason it caught my eye is that I am a recent iPhone purchaser, and I've been downloading some applications. All of a sudden, I see this article, and I'm going, well, maybe I better think about this. I hadn't really given it much thought, but I should have. I'm kind of a technology guy, and things that happen on the Internet don't really surprise me much anymore, but I hadn't really thought about what my iPhone applications were telling other people about me. Okay, I think we may have mastered telephone technology 100 years later, and I'll reintroduce my guest. She is Hang Xu, Assistant Professor of Information Sciences and Technology at Penn State University. And Professor Xu, good morning, and thanks for joining us today.
Good morning. I'm very glad to be here.
Now, I don't know if you got to hear any of the discussion that I had with Scott Thurm, who wrote the Wall Street Journal article about what's going on with some applications for the iPhone and Android-based smartphones. You're an expert on privacy and on the Internet, how this technology all works. What would be, in your view, the primary difference between the way these smartphones trade information about you and the way computers work on the Internet?
I see the differences between these two different kind of technological platforms. On smartphones, there are a couple of ways either the device manufacturers or the network providers or the service providers, they try to assign different unique identifiers to identify these smart devices. And it's hard for users to really delete these identifiers or block these identifiers. While on the web, when we browse internet, when we use different kind of web-based devices or kind of services, web services provider place cookies. That's considered another way of track web users' behaviors. But we usually can have some controls to either block or delete these cookies manually by ourselves. So that's the current differences. And in the mobile platform nowadays, we haven't seen the privacy enhancing features, such as the way of blocking or opting out these tracking for these services. So that's the major difference.
So what are these unique identifying numbers supposed to be used for? What is their purpose?
There are several different types of unique identifiers. For example, for iPhone has its own UDID. It's kind of a unique device identifier placed by the iPhone device manufacturer. And it's kind of this unique ID is kind of combination of 40 numbers and letters, and it's set by Apple. and it stays with the device forever. And give you another example, like Android phones. Most of the Android phones, they also have their own IDs. And it plays by Google Android operating systems. And this ID is set by Google and created when the user first boots up their device. So these unique identifiers on these smartphones are very difficult to remove or block from end user perspectives.
What are they for? Why are they there in the first place? I mean, I've got a phone number. Why isn't that enough?
I think these devices, it's like just serial numbers, and they were kind of placed for the purposes of protecting or tracking these devices. For example, for iPhone users, whenever you have this UDID, this unique ID placed by the Apple manufacturer or the service providers could track you for purposes such as when you downloaded certain music from other websites or services. And this UDID could try to prevent illegal downloading or illegal copyright, you know, contents to be placed on your device. So that's a way designed to identify the users, and then whenever you try to synchronize your device with the online services, they try to, you know, maybe try to search your contents and try to see whether they are legal or illegal contents. So that's one of the purposes of using UDID for the iPhone users.
What about the Android operating system? What's their identification number for? Is it because they don't operate? You don't download apps from the Google App Store. There isn't one. So what's the purpose for their unique identifier?
This set of unique identifiers, that's at the operating systems level. So it's kind of factory default kind of numbers identify a potential user. And it remains the same for a same user. Say, for example, if I want to, you know, give this device to other users, and I could reset that code, which completely deletes the phone's data and the settings on that particular handset or on that particular operating systems. So that's one of the purposes of having this Android ID on the operating system, kind of unique identify a certain user's data and their operating systems or their settings on that particular handset.
Okay, I understand why the Apple iTunes Store would want my unique identifier, my UDID. I get that. What use would someone else make of this? I mean, why would it be? Why would that information be important to someone else?
So this is a widely discussion about this Wall Street Journal article discuss about, and they kind of disclose the potential privacy threats from the third-party application developers. And right now, some of these application developers can get these unique IDs to identify these users. And thus, when these users use their applications, they can watch what kind of applications the user downloaded and how frequently they use them and how much time they spend on, you know, each type of their application and how deep into the application these users go. So by associating these behavior stream of data with this unique ID, the application developers can somehow, you know, watch the behaviors. And in order to, you know, the major purposes is that maybe they can share this data with our marketing firms, and those ads could be customized based on users' behaviors or users' preferences.
I understand why they would want to do that. What I need you to help me understand is what's the risk to me that this information is out there?
Well, from users' perspective, it's hard to tell at the current technological platforms, because most of the applications, they don't have a very good privacy practices, which means that they don't provide a notice to the users when they share these data or when they collect these data, such as these UDID and then their behaviors when they play with these applications. So that's the sad part of the current practice.
So it's we don't know when this information is being traded around. We don't understand who's getting it or when, and there's really nothing we can do about it to stop it.
I think you can say so. My advice to the users would be very careful when they download and install any third-party applications on their smartphones, and make sure that to check or search the name of the application provider online and browse their website to see whether they have a privacy notice or privacy policy, and then read that policy to see what types of information they will collect and how that information will be used and shared and with whom they may share that part of data. So that's the thing for the users they can do nowadays.
Okay. We have some callers and some emails to get to, and there's still a line available if you'd like to join the discussion. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. The email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And you can also join us on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Facebook fan page, and you can post a message there. By the way, when you go there, you'll find a link to Scott Thurm's article in the Wall Street Journal that was kind of the launching point for this discussion. Let's take a phone call. We'll talk first with Mary in Janesville. Mary, good morning.
Good morning. As I told your screener, I'm a banker, and I am hyper aware of the ramifications of identity theft or spilling of information into unwanted areas. I use a little tiny prepaid telephone with zero apps on it. I'm not going to get an iPhone. I'm not going to get the Android. I'm not going to go there because there are too many other places that the information can already be gleaned from. I am religious about removing cookies, unwanted cookies, unwanted adware and things like that from my computer. And I think that everyone should do their very best to circumvent the bleeding of their information out into the public at large. I find it very offensive that there is no requirement that makes it necessary for these manufacturers to announce that this is going to be happening to people that buy these particular models of phones.
Mary, thanks for the call. Professor Hsu, care to comment on what Mary's thoughts were there?
Yes. I think Mary's concern has been kind of valid. She worries that, you know, these mobile or these smart devices could collect more of our personal information. And currently, these personal information has been kind of misused by the third-party applications, or at least they haven't get any consent or agreement from users before they are collecting and sharing these data. I think Mary also mentioned about, you know, whether there are certain regulations we could, you know, could govern the practices in this mobile market. Based on my knowledge, there is no specific regulation that can be directly applied to this new emerging mobile market. However, the Federal Trade Commission have paid close attention to these issues. In May 2008, the FTC held a public town hall meeting to explore these new developments and then these technological impacts on mobile commerce. And the FTC and its law enforcement partners are monitoring this new emerging market since then, and I believe they will take law enforcement actions as needed. So another comment I want to address Mary's concern is from industry perspective. I mean, the industry sector takes very quick action after the release of the Wall Street Journal articles. This Monday, the Mobile Marketing Association said it plans to develop a new set of privacy guidelines, and these new rules will cover 8 different types of mobile media, such as text messages, multimedia messages, email services, voice application, mobile internet, content, and location-based services. So they are going to have more strict rules to governing the use and collection and sharing of this information on these mobile platforms.
We need to take a break, and then we'll come back. We have a bunch of people on the phone and a really good email to get to, and we will do all of that. My guest in this part of the program is Hang Xu, Assistant Professor of Information Sciences and Technology at Penn State University. She is also the leader of the Privacy Assurance Lab and Associate Director for Cybersecurity, Information Privacy, and Trust, also at Penn State. So we've got the privacy expert here, and we're talking about that in this half of the program. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:49. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. Coming up later today on Talk of the Nation after 2 o'clock, e-books, digital content, and the future of the printed word. That's Talk of the Nation coming up this afternoon after 2 o'clock. This hour, we're talking about privacy and your cell phone, or your smartphone more specifically. Wall Street Journal research study revealed that quite a few applications available for your Android or iPhones pass along your personal information to third parties for marketing purposes, but there's some concern there. We talked with Scott Thurn, the author of the article, in the first half hour. And in this half hour, we have an expert on security and privacy when it comes to things like this, Professor Hang Xu of Penn State University. And we have an email from Brian, Professor. I think this is kind of an interesting one, and I'm glad he sent it because this is where I wanted to go. Brian says, isn't the easiest way to avoid this to jailbreak iPhones and Android phones with open source operating system replacements? What do you think of that idea? Should we break our iPhones and put in a new operating system and avoid all this stuff?
This is an interesting perspective, and I think to address these issues, I would think practitioners or like big companies like Apple at Google, they have to take leaderships to kind of adopt privacy by design approach to embed it. Privacy control features at the operating system level or at their platform level when their open source platforms, when they kind of open the market to the third-party application developers. I think that's a good point, but I don't think that we, you know, totally destroy or abandon these ideas is kind of very interesting approach.
Because well, most of us wouldn't know begin to know how to jailbreak our iPhone anyway.
Mm.
I mean, that's not common knowledge.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Menominee Falls and hear what Mike has to say. Mike, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
How are you doing? I've been an internet company for 20 years now, and I'm an e-commerce company, so I'm a little bit biased, but I would say I've seen this kind of issue come up over and over again over the years for different reasons, like with the online cookies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I see it as more of just a acceptance of new technology curve. I mean, if you're online, basically everything's being tracked already through your Google searches and everything else. And I only see that the criminals are the ones who are usually worried about being tracked or their information. I mean, certainly, if the professor or you were your buying habits were leaked, I don't see where you're going to be personally injured by that.
Hmm. I think the point from commercial or business perspective is a phenomenon identified by the privacy literature called privacy calculus, which means that we see the information exchange between users and marketers or service providers as an information exchange. Like any exchange, we use money to buy services or buy products, right? Because most of developers or application providers, they provide these applications for free. But
yeah,
not absolutely free. They want something as exchange. The exchange would be the collection of the personal information from these users.
Okay, well let me just interrupt here because I really love where this discussion is going, and Mike, I'm really glad you called because I'd like you to respond to this and also Professor Hsu. If I go to your internet company and I conduct a transaction with you, I give you my information and my money in exchange for whatever product you're selling. Why isn't it reasonable for me to have an expectation that you won't share that information that I gave you in good faith with a third party?
I think it is a reasonable expectation. I mean, we've never sold our customer list to anybody or given out any of our personal information because we see that as a proprietary company thing, and we value people's privacy. I personally have dealt with a lot of professional athletes in the NFL, and I understand, you know, what privacy is all about because they're fighting that on a daily, day-to-day basis. I mean, where they are with Twitter and Facebook. So I have a pretty good understanding about that. So I would say, yes, you should have a reasonable expectation, and we do have a privacy policy that says we will not sell your information to third parties. So it never leaves our building, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, my only comment is that when you're online, there's a reason, for example, that you used to be able to buy those phones with cash and use them. So the criminals would buy the phones that couldn't be tracked because you didn't know who bought the phone. And they basically got rid of those, right? I mean, you're familiar with those phones they had that you could go into Walmart and buy with cash and then use for a period of time and then throw them away?
They're a feature of pretty much every crime drama on television.
Okay. Let me follow up with John's comments first. I think in the web context or the e-commerce or e-business context, the privacy practices has been relatively mature, which means that whenever you finish this transaction, this website or e-commerce service providers would provide you certain kind of privacy controls. They can, you know, you can log in into your account and delete your transaction history. Or you can say, I want to opt out from the future marketing mails or emails, right? So you do have these options available if you don't want to receive any of their marketing messages. But back to the mobile platform, my personal view is because it's so new and it's so emergent, and we haven't really established these good privacy practices for this platform yet. I think, or I believe, in the near future, we would, as users, right, would have these privacy control features to indicate that when I would like to be tracked or when I do want to enjoy a little bit of my privacy or why or a kind of option that I want to block certain information sharing from certain, you know, marketing companies. I think it could be done as we have been doing for the web platform.
I want to try and sneak in one quick call here. We're right at the end of the program. John and Oshkosh, I'm going to have to ask you to be really brief.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in regard to the privacy, one concern I have is that tracking usage of applications can be used to profile individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that information sold to HR companies and mm-hmm. make hiring and firing decisions based mm-hmm. on that. We've seen a little bit of that with Facebook, where some folks have gotten fired for statements that they have had on Facebook. And another point is that the information being sold actually is information about me, and there's people making money. So besides the privacy, it's mm-hmm. the fact that if this is information about me that is being sold, I am not really making anything on that information being shared. So there's two levels in here of concern. It's the fact that I'm not being compensated
right.
for that information.
Okay, we only have about a minute, so I want to make sure the professor has a chance to respond to this. Professor?
I think this raises another user awareness issues. For those information sharing activities, some service provider, they do disclose online in their policy that they will share your information with other business associates, which might include advertisement companies. For example, for the MySpace, right, in their privacy policy, they do disclose that they will share your personal information with their business associates. So it It's about user awareness issues. When they disclose information online, or when they install application online, or when they quickly click, yes, I accept these terms and conditions, my question is, you know, do users really looking into or carefully read through their terms and conditions or privacy policies? Maybe some service provider, they already disclose that they will share your information with ad companies. So that's part of this kind of agreement with, you know, using their services. But on the other hand, they will share your personal information.
And we're going to have to leave it there, Professor. Thank you for spending this time with us. It's been very informative.
Thank you.
Heng Xu is Assistant Professor of Information Sciences and Technology at Penn State University. We also spoke this hour with Scott Thurm, Deputy Chief of the San Francisco Bureau of the Wall Street Journal. This program was produced by Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning, with on-air production by Erica Janik. Stay tuned. We have more of the Kathleen Dunn program coming up. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this week, here on the Ideas Network of WPR.